Okay. We're up to Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Take a look at Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Yud Zayin through Kaf Tet. We're going to finish Perek Yudchet today. So again, that's Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Yud Zayin through Kaf Tet. Take a look. Yeah, through the end. Anything to say? Questions, problems, issues, comments. Jesse.
Like in the very beginning, when it talks about Hinor Merav, and then like nothing really necessarily happened. He's just like, oh, I'm just gonna give her someone else. Like he sort of just like says like, oh, I'm gonna give you Merav to marry, and then like the next plus is like he just gives.
The first part of the story, I would call it the first proposal, and the first proposal begins in Pasuk Yud Zayin, and yes, he put his finger exactly on I think where the first proposal ends, which is where Merav disappears from the story. So let's just read from the beginning just to clarify what I mean by this. Pasuk Yud Zayin says as follows: "Vayomer Shaul al David, hine biti hagdola Merav, ota eten lecha leisha. Here's my elder daughter, Merav, you'll marry her. Ach hayeli leven chayil vihi lachem lechamot Hashem. V'shal amar, and Shaul said, al ti adibo, I don't want my hand to be against him, uti bo v'had plishtim." Pasuk Yud Zayin is a very complicated pasuk. We're going to have to read it very, very carefully. But what is certainly, on the simplest level, what's issued here is the proposal by Shaul to David to marry Merav, what I'd call the first proposal. And then suddenly, we have David's response in Pasuk Yud Chet, Vayomer David el Shaul, Mi anochi umi chayai mishpachat avi. Now, it's unclear what that means. Who am I? Mi chayai mishpachat avi. Who is the life, or what is the life of my father's family? Some say that chayai is not chayai, but chayi, and chayi might be an ancient term for family branch, meaning my family branch is not important. Umi mishpachat avi, and what is the significance of the particular branch of my father's household that I am part of? Ki ayeh chatan lamelech. So it's the statement of mi anochi. That's David's response. And then suddenly, strangely enough, the dialogue between Shaul and David disappears, and we get this strange twist in the plot, which, unless we knew it, we wouldn't expect it. And it was at the moment when Merav bat Shaul was about to be given to David, she went to the other guy. Adriel ha-mecholati li-isha, end of the Merav story. In other words, Pasuk Yud Zayin through Yud Tet, I would call this the first proposal. the story of Shaul, David, and Merav. And Yossi is right to put his finger on this very strange occurrence of the disappearance of Merav from the story. She's strangely and bizarrely given to some other man. Why? By whom? How? No one knows. The Mikra doesn't tell us here whatsoever. I'm going to assume like that. There are two possibilities here. One possibility is that she was holechet v'mekadeshet et atzma. She just went and she was mekabel kiddushin from someone else. That's one possibility that's suggested today in Chazal and other mefarshim, etc. And by the way, you all remember from this year's Limud Gemara that this story is very significant in Masechet Kiddushin in many kind of interesting ways, which we'll maybe cite and get to a little bit later. Milva v'pruta, data pruta, data milva. Do you remember all that? We'll get back to that a little bit later. But in any case, no, not this part. But in general, the story is nitfasai the Masechet Kiddushin is somehow being something to discuss or something central. Any case, I think like the other approach, which is that Shaul, at the last minute, decides to give Merav to someone else, to this fellow Adriel Hamucholi Liisha, and therefore Merav is off the table. So it's kind of some sort of bizarre retraction of the first proposal by Shaul, the father-in-law. You can't tell. There's no way to know. It's very mysterious what's going on here. That's a good question. Why does Merav disappear from the story? Why is she nitena to someone else? Good question. Yeah, Josh.
A couple of points, or a couple of questions. One, if David somehow seems to feel that he's unworthy to be the son-in-law of Shaul, then why all of a sudden does he change his mind when Shaul says, like, oh, get me, Arlis pushed him, and then all of a sudden David's like, okay, sure, now I'll do it.
Okay, that is a very, very good question. A second interesting question here is the characterization of David in this little story. And I very much like the way you phrased it, Josh. Take a look in David's first response in the first proposal. So let's pick it up again in Pasuk Yudchet for the moment. Vayomer David el Shaul, Mi anochi umi chayai mishpachat avi b'yisroch yeyeh chatan lamelech. Who am I? How can I possibly be chatan lamelech? Now, at this point, a bit later on, the first segment, which I call the first proposal, ends. And I would say that as of Pasuk Kaf, or the beginning of Pasuk Kaf, there is a second segment where there's a different daughter at issue, a different daughter at stake. Michal is now the daughter at stake. And I would call this the second proposal, beginning in Pasuk Kaf. And it resembles in certain ways the first proposal, but it's a little bit different. But let's pick it up in Pasuk Kaf for the moment. Vate'av Michal bat Shaul et David. It begins with the love of Michal bat Shaul for David. Vayigid l'Shaul, vayishara davar beinav. He thought that was good. Okay. Pasuk Kaf Aleph, vayomer Shaul, da 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 da. And then at the end of Pasuk Kaf Aleph, vayomer Shaul el David, bishtayim titchatein bi hayom. Now again, what that means, bishtayim titchatein li bi hayom, that's very, very mysterious, because what would you expect it to say rather than Bishtayim? Bechad, because the second daughter is already, or the first daughter is off the table, right? Right? Yeah, so Bishtayim, some say Bishtayim refers to, for two reasons, Bishil Shtesi Boat, right? Some say that Bishtayim means two criteria, two conditions. You have to meet two tzna'im, is what Bishtayim means. But I think Bishtayim most probably means, like Rashi, Bishtayim means I have two daughters, so marry the second one, right? In other words, so basically, Bishtayim, titkaten li hayom, is most probably a way of saying, oh, the first daughter is off the table, so you're going to marry the second daughter. Now we go on. Then, Apasuk Kavet Vayitzav Shalot Avadav Dabru El David, he sent all these messengers, and then David responded let's pick it up on Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Vayidabru Avdei Shaul Baznei David Et Advarim Eileh, and they spoke this message, whatever these words were. Vayomer David, Hanikala Ve'enechem Hitchatein Bamelech, is it light in your eyes for someone to get married into the king's family? Vanochi Ish Rash V'nikleh. I am a, what does Ish Rash V'nikleh mean? Anybody know? Ish Rash probably means pathetic, desperate, or poor. Rash probably means poor, I have no money. And Nikle means I am light. It's the opposite of being mechubad, of having kavod. So Nikle is the opposite of being mechubad or having kavod. And it's a play on what he had said previously in the previous half sentence. Vayomer David ha-nakala b'enechim etatchitchatein. Is it a light thing that you're going to choose this Nikla man? So now here's the point. that Josh made. It seems that David refuses, not just in the first proposal by saying, Mi Anochi, but in the second proposal as well, by saying, you know, Hanikle Be'enechem Hitchatein Bamelech, right? Ani Anochi Ish Rash V'Nikle. So we have this double refusal of David, both in the first proposal and the second proposal. Now, when we move to the third section, and I think, well, where do you think, by the way, the third section might begin? Anyone? If I group this as the first proposal and the second proposal, where do you think things, maybe there's a turn? Anyone? Hands? Yeah? Yossi? Is it hand? Chaf Hey. I don't know. That's like a continuation of the proposal. Here, send them back this message, right?
No, but it's a...
Where does David change his mind?
No,
Kafav. I think it's Kafav. I think it's Kafav where I'd say that's by then the call it the proposal or the seduction or the persuasion has ended as of the end of Pasuk Kafe. Kafav, I think already is there's a significant turn here. We take a look at it. By the way, that kind of harks back to the Vayishar HaDavar Beinav at the end of Kaf. In Shaul's mind, and then we go on from there to what? We go on from there to he goes out. He brings back the bride price, the mohar, the arelot, arelot of the plishtim, and more or less through the end of Kaf Zion, I would call this the agreement and the marriage, basically, right? Because the way Kaf Zion ends is Vayitein lo Shaul Michal bat bitol isha. Now, grouping it this way, it's very nice. In the first proposal, David refuses because he says, you know, Mi Anochi the Litchaten Bamelech. In the second proposal, David again refuses. He says, Anikle Be'enechem. And then suddenly we get this turn where David hears something new. He agrees. He says, okay. And he goes out and gets the bride price, and the marriage happens. Segment three, or part three, which is the agreement and the marriage, it seems at odds with what came previously. And Josh's question is, wait a second. If David was so hesitant about Mi'chatein B'melech, what's changed? What has changed his mind here? I think that is a good question. I agree. That's a way of asking what's the dynamic of the persuasion that's happening here over the course of the second proposal. I think that's a good point. Yeah, Avi.
I think it's interesting that in terms of the marriage to Michal, Shaul gives the approval. Because he thinks that it'll be for David's detriment.
Yes.
As opposed to the first one, which wouldn't be.
The first one wasn't going to be?
The first one, it doesn't mention any of that.
No, I think Shaul's pretty consistent. Go back to Pasuk Yud Zayin in the first proposal, right? V'Shaul Amar Al Tiyadi Bo Tiyi Bo Yad Plishtim.
I know, but here he adds in Vatihi Lo Lamokish, like the marriage like itself. Just the proposal, you go and fight
Plishtim
and whatever.
You think like the marriage itself is meant to be a mokesh for David, as opposed to like the bride price that's going to be mentioned.
The first one also is that David's owed the daughter of the king.
Oh, good. Okay. This is a very, very important issue. Meaning, in addition to the problematic disappearance of Mirav, which is one question raised here, in addition to the dynamic of the story, the characterization of David, how does he change his mind, or why does he change his mind from refusal to Chatein Bamelech to agreement, which is a second important issue. A third crucial issue is you have to look at this marriage story from Pasuk Yud Zayin through Pasuk Kaftet with a very important piece of background in mind. Now let's go back to that very important piece of background. Take a look in Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Kafhei, for the moment. Remember the story of the battle against Goliath the Plishti, and the rise to prominence of David. Now remember, David had been eavesdropping, and he heard there, Yud Zayin Kafe, Vayomer Ish Yisrael, Hari Item Ha'ish Ha'ole Hazer, Ki Lecharefet Yisrael Ole, Vaya Ish Asher Yakenu Yashrenu HaMelech, Osher Gadol. The king will make him very, very rich. Ve'et bito yitain lo, and he'll give him his daughter to marry. Ve'et beit aviv yasech chavshi b'Yisrael, and his household he will allow free commerce. Wait a second. What were the two things that it's known by everybody ba'am Yisrael that you're supposed to get if you defeat the Plishti champion? Well, the first thing you're supposed to get is great riches and great wealth, right? And the second thing you're supposed to get is you have this promise that you're going to marry the king's daughter. So we have to think about, wait a second, how can David say here in Pasuk Kaf Gimel, Vanochi Rash V'Nikla, I am poor, I am pathetic. What about the great riches that he'd received from the king for defeating the Plishti? Or why is there this back and forth, this debate about whether to be Mitchatein B'Melech or not to be Mitchatein B'Melech, when he was already promised the king's daughter based upon his victory in Perek Yud Zayin, right? There's another important issue, which is the relationship between what happens here in Perek Yud Chet, what happened previously in Perek Yud Zayin, and the prior promise of wealth and being part of the king's household and being mechatein b'melech. Good. Good. All right. Yeah, you're here.
Moving on to the actual test itself, why does Shmuel Ashel ask for Orlos? First of all, doesn't seem like it's something as... But it's not like the type of thing like he wants to see like how tough he is. Hey, we know he already beat the Plishti. We know he's been beating Shaul and how many people he's been killing. He's obviously, you know, he can't be trying to kill him again, right? The Orlos don't matter for that. It's pretty sick, like, you know, like why Orlos, it's not a normal thing to do. And it's like, why Orlos specifically, like, the Plishti before, you know, the giant, what's his name, was all called Plishti, you know, Ariel.
Yes.
Don't all non-Jews have Orlos? Why just Plishti?
No.
Oh, okay, but still, like, it's not like a just Plishti thing, I assume.
It might have been a sign of a proof that these are Plishtim. It might have been that kind of sign. Or it might have meant, I don't know. Or also, you could argue, well, it's a good question. Why 100? 100 seems like a pretty large number, right?
Like, you could have just killed them, like, why do you need to argue?
Yeah, by the way, well, maybe it's proof, it's evidence. It's like scalps, right?
We know he's
a lot smaller.
His whole life already. Okay, then we know he's tough already. Why didn't he kill anybody for that reason?
Ah, okay, good. This is the opposite question. By the way, in the end of the day, how many foreskins does David wind up bringing? 200. Bring him double the number. That's also really interesting, which needs to be considered, right? But I think this is a good question as to what is this demand that Shaul makes of David to bring the Arlo Tehem back to him. And that's basically, if you think about it, that's the mohar, right? That's the mohar, which is the bride price. Take a look in Perek Yud Chet Pasuk Kaf Hey. V'yamashol kotam lo David ein chavitz l'melech b'mohar ki b'meya areilot plishtim lihi nakeim b'vei ha-melech. Right? Oh, in other words, Shaul said to his messenger, say to David that the king desires nothing but no bride price except for Me'a Arlot Plishtim. Now, it's kind of interesting because back in Kaf Gimel at the end, David had said, Vanochi ish rash v'nikle. I am pathetic, despairing, and poor, and not honorable, and therefore I'm not ra'ui. And then in Pasuk Kaf Hey, V'yam Hashol Kol Demar David, Ein Chavit Anach B'mor, Ki B'me'a Arlot Plishtim. Oh, it's not about money, right? The bride price is here's something you can give. So, in other words, maybe in some ways this is a way of defining some sort of bride price which David can give, right? That it's not necessarily about mutilation of the Plishtim per se. Maybe that's one way to go. But alternatively, look in the next half sentence, Lihi Nakeim Ba'ivei HaMelech. It's a tangible symbol of nikama, vengeance. If you're mutilating them, it's a tangible symbol of vengeance against the enemies of the king. So one possibility to explain why Arlo Tehem is that this is a price that David can make because he doesn't have money, right? And he is a warrior. A second possible explanation is that it's a tangible symbol of the nekama of the melech, or maybe there's something else going on. So I think it's still a good question, which needs to be dealt with. Very good. Yeah, Judah.
I think it's interesting. So the beginning of the parak, we dealt with the fact that we dealt with the love that was between Yonatan and David, and then we quickly end the parak with Michal's love for David. And I think what's on top of that, what's interesting is that then it says that afterwards that Shaul continued to fear David, yet Michal was married to David, and that seems like a recipe for disaster for Shaul, that
David's wife.
Okay, I kind of agree with you. Part four of the story. Take a look at part four of the story. I believe it begins in Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Kafchet. Take a look there. It says as follows. V'yar Shaul, v'yada ki Hashem im David, u'michal bat Shaul, ahay havtu. And Michal, God, it turned out that God was with David, and Michal bat Shaul loved him. V'yosef Shaul, le'rom epnei David, Shaul continued to be increasingly afraid of David. Od v'yi Shaul oyev et David k'lamim, his enemy for all days. Now, Judah is correct to point out this kind of fascinating parallel between Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Kafchet, and the love of Michal bat Shaul for David, and the love of another child of Shaul's for David. Go back to Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Bet, Pasuk Aleph even. In Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Aleph, we have the following. So Yonatan ben Shaul loves David. So it's as if all of Shaul's children, his son and his daughter, they all love David. It's like the family betrayal of Shaul. If the previous story was about Yonatan giving away the keys of the kingdom to David because he loved David more than he loved his own father, right? Or loved his own self even. So here it's the same kind of thing. That in this next story here at the end of Perek Yudchet, it's about the daughter of Shaul loving David. The daughter of Shaul loving David more than she loves herself or more than she loves her father and giving away the keys to the kingdom. And it's about Shaul's increasing isolation because Yonatan and Michal love David, but Shaul does obviously not love David at this point. He's afraid of him, he resents him, he's concerned about him. So it's another one of these stories of increasing isolation of Shaul. I certainly agree, and that's the function of the fourth part of the story on some plane, that Shaul's increasing isolation, etc. I agree. Joseph.
Right at the end when it says that he should only have David's claim, is that one way or two ways?
Which pasuk?
Right at the end,
Kaftat. V'yasof Shaul erom epnei David od v'yi Shaul erom epnei David k'lamim. What is the question?
David was an enemy of Shaul. Is in Shaul's eyes, David was an enemy?
Yes.
It's basically
no, in Shaul's eyes. In Shaul's eyes. I think, by the way, this is another kind of important question to consider here, in addition to things raised beforehand. And this kind of emerges from your point, from Yair's point, and from Judah's point earlier. What's the characterization of Shaul here? Oh, we see him as increasingly isolated. We see him as viewing David as an enemy, right? But what's his whole motivation with the marriage proposal? And this kind of goes back to Avi's point. What about the background of, didn't he owe a daughter already to David in the first place, right? So I think in addition to all the interesting questions raised here, which were, one, why did Merav disappear from the story? Two, what's the connection to the previous story with the promise of the wife? Three, what's going on with David that at first he doesn't want to be in Chatein B'melech and he agrees? Four, what's the significance or the symbolism of the foreskins and why? How does that work to persuade David, or why does Shaul ask for that? I think also, five, I would add, what is the characterization of Shaul that is done by this little story, right? How does that relate to the previous promise he'd made, or the fact that he's become increasingly isolated, or he's his enemy, or everything else is going on? There's some additional unfolding of something we're learning about Shaul in this story. We have to read the story about as being about Shaul as well as being about David here. Yeah, Adin, what were you going to say?
Not sure if I buy into this, but can you see like David's comments, like we spoke to him as like somewhat like, is he really that humble, or is he sort of like playing dumb, like being somewhat sarcastic? Like me and Ochi, like he is the king. After the daughter has already been promised, like, who am I that I should marry the king's daughter? This should have been coming to me a long time ago. And like this, and the second one, hankala beinechem hitchatein b'melech hanochi ish rash v'nikleh. I'm a poor man. Like this also this should be coming to me. Like it seems to be like he's sort of like playing dumb. And this is after the ruach ra. This is after he's been in his house. This is after he understands.
So Adin thinks that if we take a look carefully at Pasuk Yurchet for the moment, David's first profession of not being Ra'ui. V'yamar David el Shaul, mi anochi umi chaya mishpachat David b'Yisrael ki yeh chatan la'melech. So you can read that as being honest, he really means it. You can read it exactly the opposite of being sarcastic. He's like, what do you mean? Don't you know who I am, that I deserve this and shouldn't you have offered this to me a while ago? I don't know, that seems a bit extreme to me. Or the latter time around, when David says, maybe the latter one could be read sarcastically if you like this kind of thing. I don't, by the way, but if you like this kind of thing. Kaf Kimmel. V'yidabru avdei Shaul baznei David et adver ma'ila v'yomar David hanikala v'inechem et chatein b'melech. Is it a light thing? V'nochi ish rash v'nikle. Anochi ish rash v'nikle. I was promised great wealth by the king, and I haven't yet been paid it. Subtext, I haven't yet been paid it, and therefore I'm light, and my pockets are light, and I'm not heavy with wealth because he didn't pay me, and that's why I have no money to give as a moar. In other words, maybe there's something else going on here directly counter to everything that you thought. That's a fascinating suggestion. I think it's way over the top, or way over the edge.
Why would Shaul send him to go get...
Hold on, I'm in the middle of a sentence. I think that's way over the top, way over the edge. But there's something to it. I think it's an important issue to raise. To what extent are these professions of humility or not being ra'oi meant to be taken that way? Or maybe something else is going on? And it goes back to the question of the characterization of David here. I think that is very, very important. Okay, Yaakov, last comment, then I want to move on.
It's more of a question. I'm wondering how Shaul is reading the situation in his household, because we already know the narrator of the parak told us that David was loved amongst the Avdei Shaul. I'm trying to find the pasuk. Right, in pasuk Hey it says Vayitav b'nei kol am v'gam b'nei Avdei Shaul, and yet over here he's using the servant, the emissaries to David back and forth are the servants of Shaul, and really he's trying to use the servants to kill David or to get him killed. And I'm wondering how is he reading the situation and using and being wily and using the people who love David against him, or is he just oblivious to the fact that everyone loves David and he's...
Oh, that's a good question. And it goes, again, it's the question of the characterization of Shaul. What's his agenda here? What are his motivations when he sends these guys or those guys? All good issues. What I want to do, what I propose to do, is to, because there are these, I think there are these quite complicated characterizations of Shaul and David and the back and forth between them in this part of the parak. What I want to do is just read pasuk by pasuk through it. And as we do so, I think we'll be able to get a grasp on a lot of the different questions and issues you guys raised previously. And maybe we'll go in some new directions as well. And I think also, well, one thing we will not be able to solve, I think, we'll have to leave as a question mark right now, might be the what happened to me, Rav, question. We'll come back to that a little bit later. What? You have an answer?
Yeah.
What's your answer? Wait, hold up. Let's go. Let's begin from the beginning, okay? Trying to integrate a lot of the points that were made here. Let's pick it up from in Pasuk Yud Zayin as following. Okay. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayoma Shaul David... Hine biti hagdola me'rav, ota eten lecha li'isha. Pause, okay? So what does this sound like it is? What is this? This is the kiyum of the original haftacha, right? In other words, originally, let's go back to the background, right? Go back to Yud Zayin Cafe again. Vayom yesh Yisrael harita me'isha ole hazek ki lecharef et Yisrael ole vaya yesh asher yakenu. There's nothing surprising here. We as readers are kind of expecting that David will now be mitchatein b'melech, because that's what had been promised as the victory, as the result of victory against the Plishti champion, as against Goliath. Okay, so where's the surprise? Where's the surprise? The surprise is the next word. Take a look at the next word of Pasuk Yud Zayin. Ach. Now, wait a second. Why is there an ach? David already theoretically did what was sufficient in order to marry the king's daughter. So the ach, or the introduction of a condition at this point, demonstrates that until this point, the deal has been reneged upon. In other words, whatever was supposed to happen hasn't yet happened, and the ach is already loaded. And now we begin with Shaul's conditions. Ach, heyeli leven chayo, v'hilachem milchamot Hashem, kama. Okay, all right, but you know, I have one condition. I want you to be a ben chayil v'hilachot milchamot Hashem. So at this point, how do you evaluate Shaul?
Well,
at this point? What does he want?
Wants David to stay with Mordechai.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one possibility is that he's well-intentioned. He wants this good warrior to be Lochem Melchamot Hashem, and therefore he's held back on the previous promise that was made, because now he's going to make an additional condition. Okay, so yeah, you won the previous battle. You're supposed to get the daughter as a wife, and now you're going to continue doing that. So it sounds pretty good, right? You could take Shaul at face value. Hail ben Chayav Lochem Melchamot Hashem. And or maybe alternatively,
he doesn't want to go through it. He wants to kill David. So.
Well, do we know that yet? No, we don't know that yet. But
no, but I mean,
yeah. He tried to spear him previously. Okay, we might suspect it already because of the previous spearing. But here, the Mikra switches gears and it gives us clearly the insight. Right after the word V'ilchem Melchamot Hashem. So that's the professed motivation of Shaul why there's going to be a condition. V'Shaul Amar. Where did he say this? Who did he say this to? He said this internally. Shaul Amar, that's an insight into Shaul's internal speech. Alti Yadibo, Divo Yad Plishtim. Oh, I'm let my hand not be upon him. Of course, the Yad that held the Chanid in the previous story. And let the hand of the Plishtim go against him. Now, by the way, is this ringing any bells, this idea of let's not our hand or my hand be against him, but let someone else's hand be against him. What? Yeah, take a look in Bereishit Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Kaf Aleph. Go back to Bereishit Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Kaf Aleph. There you have the following. Vayishma Ruvain, Vayatzileu. Ruvain heard about the plot of the brothers, Miyadam, from their hand, Vayamar lo nakenu nafesh. It's the exact same thing. And as Yosef, Reuven persuaded the brothers, don't kill him directly by our hand. It's better to commit indirect murder, Yad al tish l'chubo, by just throwing him into the bar and he'll be captured, he'll be killed, he'll be stung or something along those lines. So indirectly disposing of your enemies lets you off the hook a little bit. So there's a kind of comparison implicitly between Shaul here and the brothers of Yosef. And the idea is that the real motivation is this indirect desire, or this desire to indirectly dispose of Shaul. V'Shaul amar al yadibo v'tibo yad plishtim. Now, it then turns out that if this is the correct reading, what is this story telling us about the character of Shaul? What's the characterization of Shaul here? He is devious and he is scheming, right? I certainly agree. And what's his motivation here throughout the entire story? Is he of any interest in keeping his original promise to give the champion against the Plishtim his daughter to marry and having him as part of the family? No, his sole motivation, he's completely reneged on the original deal, and all this is a plot, and his sole motivation is that ti yad Plishtim bo. He wants Shaul to die, he wants David to die at the hands of the Plishtim, and that is consistently Shaul's motivation throughout the story. And the truth is, if you think about it, that phrase, that exact phrase of ti yad ti bo yad plishtim appears three times in the story. Take a look in Pasuk Kaf Aleph in the second proposal, and there you have in Kaf Aleph, Vayomer Shaul et tnena lo utihi lo lemokesh utihi bo yad plishtim. It'll be a stumbling block for him. He'll have to go get the bride price I'm going to ask for, and tiyad bo plishtim. And there it is again. And then one more time in Pasuk Kaf Hey, when Shaul changes, says, "Oh, the mor is just the 100 arelot." Vayomer Shaul kol tamru David ein chavetz amalch b'mor ki b'mea arelot plishtim lehinakem b'vei hamelech. By the way, does Shaul have any interest in Nekama against Ovei HaMelech?
Not really.
Not really, unless you redefine Nekama against Ovei HaMelech. Who's the real Ovei HaMelech?
David.
David, right? So therefore, this answers the issue of the Arelot. It's part of Shaul's deviousness, that he wants to get David into a dangerous, reckless battle where he's going to have to mutilate the Plishtim. That's obviously going to arouse the ire of the Plishtim, and it makes things more dangerous for David. You know, it's three times throughout the story we're told And actually, in the end of Pasuk Kafei there, v'Shaul chashav. Again, the Mikra tells us the internally what's going on with Shaul chashav va'pil et David b'yad plishtim. He thought to cause David to fall into the hands of the Yad Plishtim. So the motivation of Shaul is consistent to get him into fall into the hands of the Yad Plishtim, to get him killed, and he wants to do this, the whole first proposal of marriage, the second proposal of marriage. It's all about suggesting this bizarre bride price of the Arelot, which is going to get David into a dangerous situation. So I think we've certainly answered, I think, Yair's question. It's not just about a symbol of vengeance against the Plishtim. It's not something that David can meet, but it's dafka something that endangers David, which is part of Shaul's motivation here. Now, regarding the general question of characterization here, we've claimed that Shaul is deceitful. And the way we know that Shaul is deceitful in this story, he's reneged on the original deal. That's one. Two, he's making all these proposals of marriage, but the sole purpose is to create this trap for David by which he's going to die. And three times, the Mikra gives us this insight into the internal speech of Shaul, Kadesh Tiev Yad Plishtim Bo. Now, anyway, anybody, a third or maybe a fourth example of the deviousness or deceitfulness of Shaul. Anybody have any others that they can spot here? Yeah, Mayor?
Wasn't clear to me that Shaul knew, that David knew.
No, answer my question. Does anybody have any other examples here in the story of the deception or deceitfulness of Shaul? Yeah. Yes, exactly. In the second proposal, I agree. That's good. Take a look in the second proposal, beginning in Pasuk Kaf Aleph. Okay? Vayomer Shaul, etznena lo utihi lo lemokesh uti bo yad plishtim. This is the internal speech of Shaul, right? Shaul said to himself, I'll give him Michal, and it will be a snare for him, uti bo yad plishtim, which is a standard Shaul plan. Now, what does Shaul do? Vayomer Shaul David b'shtayim titchadim b'yayom. I'll marry my second daughter, Pasuk Kaf Bet. Vayitzav Shaul et avadav dabru el David balat. Oh, then besides making the explicit proposal to David of marrying my second daughter, he also sends these secret messengers. The word balat means in secret. So he sends these secret messengers. Lamar hinei chafetz, and Shaul says to Davidim, this is what you should go whisper in his ear. Hinei chafetz b'cha hamelech. Oh, the king desires you. V'chol avadav v'hevucha, and all his avadim love you. V'atay t'chatein b'melech. So he sends this secret messenger go whisper in his ear about how much he's beloved by the king and by his avadim. Now, part of that is true. We know that David is beloved by the avdei melech, but he's certainly not beloved by the melech atzmo. So he sends him secret messengers to whisper falsehoods in his ear to persuade him to agree to the devious plan, which is going to endanger him. So I certainly think that the sending of the secret messengers and the story about the king loving him is a third example of the deceitfulness or deception of Shaul in the story, where one is the reneging on the original deal, two is the fact that he's talking about marriage, but really he's talking about he's really wants to endanger David, and three is the sending of the secret messengers with this story about the king loves you, and of course we know that's exactly the opposite is not true. And I think the fourth one we already mentioned is what we would call in Hebrew the posa. In other words, what's the whole pose here? When Shaul talks about you're going to continue the battle against the Plishtim, there are two phrases that Shaul uses to describe what he wants David to do against the Plishtim. Phrase one is back in the first proposal in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Ach hayeli leven chayal v'ilachem melchamot Hashem. This is all about melchamot Hashem. We, David, want you to continue on with the melchamot Hashem, right? Or later on in the second proposal, right? When we get to the switch of the mohar in pasuk kafhei, vayomer Shaul kol tamru leDavid ein chavetz lamelech b'mohar ki b'me'a arelot plishtim lehinakem b'ovei hamelech. It's about nekama b'ovei hamelech. Now, if you're talking the language of a hilachem melchamot Hashem, or lehina came of the Amalek, what kind of person are you? What kind of person are you?
Fine, upstanding.
You're a fine, upstanding, idealistic person. This is exactly what should be done, right? We should be lochem lochamot Hashem, and you should be nokem nikmat Amalek against the enemies of Am Yisrael. These are all good, fine things to do. And that's what it's about on the surface. But what, that's the pose. What's it really all about? It's really about killing David, right? It's the exact opposite of the Milchamot Hashem, or it's the exact opposite of Nekamot HaMelech, or it is the Nekamot HaMelech, because the real enemy of the Melech is David. So in all, you know, it's throughout the entire story, in terms of reneging on the original deal, in terms of three times the Mikra giving us insight into Shaul's eternal speech about this being being about the Yad Plishtim being with David, in terms of the sending of the secret messages with the story about how much the king is beloved by David, but we know that's beloved by Shaul. How much David is beloved by Shaul, we know that's not the case. And finally, in terms of the idealistic pose of Milchamot Hashem or Nikmat HaMelech, we see here that Shaul is deceitful and manipulative. He is a trickster from the beginning of the to the end of the story. It's a very clear and harsh condemnation of Shaul in this story, at least at this point. And this is very, very important. Hold on to this. When I say at least at this point, because what I'm going to show you, and I probably will not get to today, but next time, this story is the beginning. I'm going to give you a major hint here. This story is the beginning of a mahalach that goes all the way back to Sefer Bereishit and all the way forward to the almost the last conversation ever between David and Shaul. I have my parak kaf dalet. So in other words, this issue of Shaul's relationship with David and the deceitfulness and the manipulation is very, very important. And I'm going to give you guys a striking hint now for the moment to the idea here. Let's just think conceptually for the moment, okay? You know, there's a father-in-law. He's got two daughters, right? And the two daughters, one of them is older and one of them is younger. And there's a promised daughter that's going to be married, right? In other words, there's a betrothal to some promised daughter. And then in some strange way, the betrothal to the promised daughter never works out. Daughter one is swapped out and daughter two is put in, okay? Now, if you all got the echo here, I think there is an obvious thematico, which we'll talk about in a little bit later on, to the story of Lavan and Yaakov, and the two daughters, where there's a betrothal to the promised daughter, and at the strange last minute, daughter one, the promised daughter is swapped out, and daughter two winds up going in, right? In other words, that's the answer, by the way, and this I'm going to commit to aggressively later on. That's the real answer to the disappearance of Merav from the story. The disappearance of the presence of Merav, right? That there's the betrothed promised daughter, the reneging on the promise and the swapping in of a new daughter, right? And the move from proposal one to proposal two has to do with this parallelism to the story of Lavan and Yaakov. And it's part of something much larger going on, which we'll come to a little bit later. But before we lay that out, I want to switch over to the other side and talk about the characterization of David here and talk extensively about Josh's question of the refusals of David and what changes and where David stands here in the story before we get to this Love on Yaakov thing. Yeah, Adin, what do you want to say?
Quickly. Basically, Shaul is doing whatever, he's very manipulative. He'll do whatever he can to get to get to his goal, which is eventually his first goal of, which is to begin kill through marrying one of his daughters. So he tries to marry off Merav, and David's original counter argument for why he can't marry off is seemingly a familial. I don't have the legacy. You can't do it. So he realizes. He realizes that proposal fails, so he wants to go with the. And I think there's a difference between the older daughter. I heard someone, there's a difference between the older one, there was a thing about the older daughter, the oldest daughter, that had to do with something with legacy, so she had to marry someone important. The second daughter was less important.
The only person who ever told that to us was Lavan Harami, who said, "Lo yasakim b'chira l'teit b'chira l'teit tzira l'fnei b'chira." Right? No, it's only Lavan who teaches us about older daughters, younger daughters. We wouldn't know anything about older daughters and younger daughters if not for Lavan.
No, exactly. No, but I'm saying, but because he realizes he can't marry the older daughter, so he has to marry the younger daughter. And then he goes straight to Adriel because of that concept of
okay, hold off. We'll come back to it. Mayor, what do you want to say? Quickly.
In addition to the different examples you've given this show, it's the fact that he starts off making, even though he was originally promised the person who killed Goliath, he promised him his daughter as a wife, and then he starts making changes to the deal. So maybe he doesn't even know or isn't even aware that David overheard this conversation from before. And he's taking advantage of David's foolishness. And then on the part of David, the flip side, meaning it's possible that David calculated this entire thing from beforehand and was aware that he was going to be promised, because he promised his daughter, or maybe, and therefore his entire, everything else reflects everything else, and it's false modesty. Or he happened to stumble across it and overhear it, and then he just...
Okay, so now we now have all the options on the table between Josh and Meir. We have all the options on the table regarding the characterization of David. Let's just look at David's consistent refusal inside, and let's put these options out there, and I want to cover that and then move on to something else. Take a look. Go back to the first proposal, to Pasuk Yud Chet. David says, Vayomer David el Shaul, his first response, Mi anochi umei mi chayai mishpachat avi b'Yisrael ki echatan lamelech. Who am I, what am I, that I will marry into the king's household? Or, again, in Pasuk Kaf Gimel, the second time around, Vayomer David hanakala b'inichem hitchaten b'melech v'anochi ish rash v'nikleh. I am a poor man and a light man, and etc. The question is, how do you evaluate this? So one problem is the fact that he changes his mind later on, right? Take a look in Pasuk Kavav, Vayagidu avadav David et davar me'elev, Vayishar hadavar be'enei David et chatein b'melech. So suddenly now he thinks it's a good idea. What happened? What changed? That's one problem. And a second problem, what do you do with the fact that way back when in Parag Zion, David thought he was going to win the prize of the king's daughter. He thinks he's won the prize of the king's daughter already. So if David thinks that he's won the prize of the king's daughter, why is he refusing? So in other words, the problem of how to evaluate David's refusal goes in two directions. It goes forward, why does he change his mind? And it goes backwards, why is he refusing in the first place if he already thought that he'd won the prize? So this is very, very difficult and very, very strange and needs to be evaluated. Now, a third problem I will add to that. It doesn't just go back forwards and backwards. It also goes sideways. What do I mean by it goes sideways? It goes sideways because take a look in Sefer Shoftim in Perek Vav, and this is something I should have thought of on my own, but actually Dat Mikra pointed me to it. Take a look in Shoftim Perek Vav, Pasik Tet Vav. There you have the following. Okay. When Gideon is offered the leadership of Am Yisrael, what does Gideon say? Vayomer elav bi Adoni bama oshiat Yisrael hine al pi hadal b'menashe. My thousands or my regiment or my group is the smallest or the lightest or the weakest or the poorest in Menashe. Vanochi hatzair b'veiti. So the notion of being impoverished amongst family or one of the impoverished families or the weak or pathetic families is something said Gideon when he's originally offered the leadership. Now, by the way, what other character, when he's offered the leadership / kingship, talks about being tsair or dal or a weak family? Obviously, who? Shaul Atzmo. Take a look in Perek Tet, Pasuk Kaf Aleph, here in Sefer Shmuel. In Perek Tet, Pasuk Kaf Aleph, we have the following. Okay. In Tet Kaf Aleph, what does Shaul say? Vayan Shaul Vayomer. Hello, ven yemini anochi miktanei shivtei Yisrael u'mishpachti atzira mikol mishpachot shevet Binyamin v'lam adibayit like the davar hazeh. Again, ktanei shevet Yisrael u'mishpachti atzira. So the steadfast refusal of, in other words, when this is when it goes sideways. I mean, is this real? Is this genuine? Is this genuine humility? Is it genuine humbleness? Is it just a pro forma thing you're supposed to say when you offer the leadership and the kingship? I mean, again, so we have this problem of it going forwards, why he changes his mind, why going backwards, wasn't he entitled? And going sideways, how do we evaluate this kind of thing in general, etc.? So here's my question for you guys. How do you read it? I think there are a bunch of different possibilities. I would like to hear what your intuitions are. How do you read David's proposals, David's refusals to Chatein Bamelech, and why he changes his mind, and etc., etc., etc.? Yeah, Ty, what do you think?
I think it's totally innocent, I would describe it as. In other words, he thinks at the beginning that in order to get into the king's household, you have to be wealthy and from the best families and those kind of things. So therefore, he's not wealthy, he's not from the best family, so he doesn't come in. When the king reveals that any father would just want 100 foreskins of the Plishtim, then David's heart leaps. He says, I can get 100 foreskins, so let me bring those.
This is the classic way to read this, and this is more or less all the classic Mefarshim go. This is also the way Doc Mikra goes. That David is genuinely humble. David knows that he is from a lowly family, and he has genuine humility. He doesn't think he deserves to be mitchaten b'melech. And when he says mi anochi, he actually means it, and he's given up on whatever his hopes and dreams had been previously before he defeated the Plishti, because his humility overcomes whatever desires he had previously, so he actually has given up on it, right? And he's humble and honest throughout the entire thing. Later on, when the king changes the price on him, right, take a look, jump down to, and this is exactly the point that Taig made, take a look in Pasuk Kafei. Vayomer Shaul, ko tamru David, Ein chefetz lamelech b'mohar. The king doesn't want chefetz b'mohar. By the way, and what he said, what are the secret messages told in pasuk kafbet? Veitzav shul davadav dabru David balat lemor hinei chafetz b'cha hamelech v'chol avadav. So it's ein chefetz in money, but chefetz b'cha David, and therefore the only desired bride price is the arelot, is the foreskins, right? And then what happens is, it's ironic, right? It was Vayishar HaDavar Be'enei Shaul to give him the second daughter to kill him, and here it's Vayishar HaDavar Be'enei David. He agrees, but not to die for the purpose of Yimchatein B'melech, because this is a task he knows he can accomplish. He doesn't have money, he doesn't have prestige, he doesn't have dignity, but he does have warrior prowess. So therefore, he changes his mind because now the price has been changed, and he knows that he can accomplish this. Now, on this reading, Shaul is devious and deceitful and duplicitous, and David is humble and naive and honest and decent, and he falls prey to the seduction, right? He's tricked into this. The trick is successful. He says, oh, I have battle prowess, I'll go do that, right? And so he's tricked, and he's taken advantage of. But of course, it turns out the reverse, because he doesn't die. He actually succeeds, he gets 200, right? And he succeeds ubigadol, because instead of 100, how many does he bring? 200, right? And furthermore, he did it before the demanded time. Take a look in Pasuk Kaf Vav, right? That means the allotted time wasn't filled. Vayimalum lamelech litchatein b'melech. He gave 200. Same word milui. So in less than the subscribed time, he was able to double the order. Right? It's a play on the word malui amim. The time was not filled, but the order was doubled. Was filled double in that amount of time. So there's a great irony here that despite the success of Shaul's deceitful and duplicitous plan in tricking the humble and honest David into this ridiculous task of attacking the Plishtim, it doesn't lead to David's death, it dafka leads to David's success. And that brings us to part four of the story, which Judah read as, the increasing isolation of Shaul, and David is successful, and everybody loves him, and the exact opposite of what Shaul wanted emerges from the entire story. So one way to read David here as honest, humble, etc., and it's in a contrast with Shaul, and then that leads to a kind of interesting reading of the entire story. Tiger, I'll let you continue. We'll take one more comment, then we have to stop. Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make two quick points. Number one, this would explain nicely the stylistic nature of the way that the character is written, because it's like a classic painting of two characters, a very evil character and a very good character.
Yes, they're extremes almost, right? Good, that's right. That's the reading here. Good.
And that's why the Navi tells us that it has to tell us the duplicit nature of Shaul,
over and over to tell us how manipulative Shaul is, correct.
But we never get an insight into what David's really thinking, because his pair and his labor are
yefemod. In other words, the highlighting of Shaul's duplicitousness is in contrast to telling us nothing about David, because there is nothing mitachat l'pnei hashetach. He is what he is. He is exactly what you get. That's good.
Now, the other way to go, I will end with this point, is that this is one way to characterize David. But there's an intuition out there in this room that this is too naive of a reading of David. And you can either go with Meir's formulation that David is cagey, David is manipulative, David knows something else that he has to say, and that's reading two of David. Or you can even go with Adin's really nasty reading of David, that David is sarcastic and saying, yeah, who am I? Who am I? I'm just the guy who's promised everything. Yeah, who am I, the poor guy? I'm just the guy who's supposed to be rich, right? Whereas that, I think, would be too extreme. But the very possibility of that reading shows us that maybe there's another way to go here, that David is nowhere near as naive or simplistic as we painted around in this reading. The key to unlocking this will be to go back to the Yaakov and Lavan story, because if Shaul is going to be Lavan, then David is going to be Yaakov. And you're going to have to evaluate the relationship between Lavan, what's his, he's called Lavan, Haram, the Ramai, right? And Yaakov is the Ish Tam. So you're going to have to evaluate the relationship between Lavan Arami slash Shaul and Yaakov Ish Tam slash David to come back to the story and reread it. So we'll go in that direction next time. And if you have a chance, look at Perek Kaftet and Breishit and catch the parallels to our story. There are like four or five great ones. Okay. We'll do that next time.